堂听 class.com。
Passage 1.
The death penalty. Mayor Edward Koch maintains that the death penalty affirms life. By failing to execute murderers, he says, we signal a lowered regard for the value of the victim's life. Koch suggests that people who oppose the death penalty are like Kitty Genovese's neighbors who heard her cries for help but did nothing while an attacker stabbed her to death. This is the standard moral defense of death as punishment. Even if executions don't deter violent crime any more effectively than imprisonment, they are still required as the only means we have of doing justice in response to the worst of crimes. South Carolina resumed executing prisoners with the electrocution of Joseph Carl Shaw. Shaw was condemned to death for helping to murder two teenagers while he was serving as a military policeman. His crime, propelled by mental illness, was one of terrible brutality. It is Shaw's last words, "Killing was wrong when I did it. It is wrong when you do it," that so outraged Mayor Koch. He finds it a curiosity of modern life that we are being lectured on morality by cold-blooded killers. And so it is. But it was not modern life that brought this curiosity into being. It was capital punishment. The electric chair was J.C. Shaw's platform. The mayor mistakenly writes that Shaw's statement came in the form of a plea to the governor for mercy. Actually, Shaw made it only seconds before his death, as he waited, shaved and strapped into the chair, for the switch to be thrown. It was the chair that provided Shaw with an opportunity to lecture us on right and wrong. What made this weird moral reversal even worse is that J.C. Shaw faced his own death with undeniable dignity and courage. For those who had to see the execution of J.C. Shaw, it wasn't easy to keep in mind that the purpose of the execution was to affirm life. It will be harder still when Florida executes a cop killer named Alvin Ford. Ford has lost his mind during his years of death row confinement and now spends his days trembling, rocking back and forth, and muttering unintelligible prayers. This has led to litigation over whether Ford meets the legal standard for mental competency. For centuries, the Anglo-American legal system has generally prohibited the execution of anyone who is too mentally ill to understand what is about to be done to him and why. If Florida wins its case, it will have earned the right to electrocute Ford in his present condition. If it loses, he will not be executed until the state has given him sufficient treatment and restored his mental health. We can at least be thankful that this demoralizing example involves a prisoner who is actually guilty of murder. But this may not always be so. The ordeal of Lenel Jeter, the young black engineer who recently served more than a year of a life sentence for a Texas armed robbery that he didn't commit, should remind us that the system is quite capable of making the very worst sort of mistake. That Jeter was eventually cleared is a stroke of luck. If the robbery had occurred at 7 p.m. rather than 3 p.m., he would have had no alibi and would still be in prison today. And if someone had been killed in the robbery, Jeter would probably have been sentenced to death. I don't claim that executions of innocent people will occur very often, but they will occur. And other sorts of mistakes already have. Roosevelt Green was executed in Georgia 2 days before J.C. Shaw. Green and an accomplice kidnapped a young woman. Green swore that his companion shot her to death after Green had left and that he knew nothing about the murder. Green's claim was supported by a statement that his accomplice made to a witness after the crime. The jury was never able to decide whether Green was telling the truth, and when he tried to take a polygraph test a few days before his scheduled execution, the state of Georgia refused to allow the examiner into the prison. As the pressure for symbolic retribution mounts, the courts, like the public, are losing patience with such details. Green was electrocuted on January 9th. Another sort of arbitrary decision happens all the time. Last October, Louisiana executed a man named Ernest Knighton. Knighton had killed a gas station owner during a robbery. Like any murder, this was a terrible crime. But it was not premeditated, and is the sort of crime that very rarely results in a death sentence. Why was Knighton electrocuted when almost everyone else who committed the same offense was not? Was it because he was black? Was it because his victim and all 12 members of the jury that sentenced him were white? Was it because Knighton's court-appointed lawyer presented no evidence on his behalf at the sentencing hearing? Or maybe there's no reason except bad luck. One thing is clear. Ernest Knighton was picked out in the same way a fisherman takes a cricket out of a bait jar. No one cares which cricket gets impaled on the hook. Not every prisoner executed recently was chosen that randomly, but many were. And having selected these men so casually, so blindly, the death penalty system asks us to accept the purpose of killing each of them is to affirm the sanctity of human life. The death penalty states are also learning that the death penalty is easier to advocate than it is to administer. In Florida, where executions have become almost routine, the governor reports that nearly a third of his time is spent reviewing the mercy requests of condemned prisoners. The Florida Supreme Court is hopelessly backlogged with death cases. Some have taken 5 years to decide, and the rest of the court's work waits in line behind the death appeals. Florida's death row currently holds more than 230 prisoners. State officials are reportedly considering building a special death prison devoted entirely to the isolation and electrocution of the condemned. The state is also considering the creation of a special public defender unit that will do nothing else but handle death penalty appeals. The death penalty, in short, is spawning death agencies. Perhaps we want to inflict punishment on a handful of convicted murderers so badly that we're willing to close our eyes to all of the negative results that come with it. A lot of politicians think so, and they may be right. But if they are, then let's at least look honestly at what we're doing. This lottery of death both comes from and encourages an attitude toward human life that it is not reverent, but reckless. And that is why the mayor is dead wrong when he confuses such fury with justice. He suggests that we trivialize murder unless we kill murderers. By that logic, we also trivialize rape unless we rape rapists. The sin of Kitty Genovese's neighbors wasn't that they failed to stab her attacker to death. Justice does demand that murderers be punished, and common sense demands that society be protected from them. But neither justice nor self-preservation demands that we kill men whom we have already imprisoned.